What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Fredita!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic or Rockfin or listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate your support. We know you have a lot of choices out there. Thanks for spending time with us. And if you like this show, share it, because God knows the algorithms won't do us any favors. Look, 2020 has been the advertisement for getting yourself ready. If you aren't thinking about being prepared, then I don't know what to tell you. Maybe you enjoy living in this insanity. Personally, I do not. If you want to take your preparedness to the next level, listen, if you're watching shows like this, then what's the point of understanding this information if you aren't going to take the additional step and do something about it? So we have a deal with My Patriot Supply. They'll give you $100 off of a four-week supply. All you have to do is go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and take a look at the website. Anything you buy there helps to support the show as well. They have free shipping on orders over $99. So check it out. Get yourself prepared. It's not just food. It's all sorts of items that they have, water filtration, tents, things like that, survival items. Get yourself ready. I don't know. I don't see 2021 being much better, but I'll tell you what, if there was somebody that I thought could come in and help us to navigate this insanity, it is Harry Vock. So Harry, hey, how are you? Thanks for coming on the show. I love your work. I connect with your frustration so much because I feel it myself. And, you know, we just had Helen Beniski on, and she's phenomenal, as you know, and she also comes at this, you know, I kind of like that New York energy. There's something contagious about that, you know, and maybe it's in conjunction with the punk rock vibe. I don't know, but putting them together with the RT writing, I just felt like she is had a good, you know, her finger on the pulse of what was happening here. And through her work, I got connected to your work. And I was like, well, now I understand why you guys are friends. So, hey, thanks for coming on the show. What's happening in New York City?
Well, I mean, it's an authoritarian fascist push that's going on, the same as in every city and in every capital of the world, except for some very few exceptions. One wonders whether they were able to, whether they had this all lined up prior to, like, this pulling this scamdemic, you know, or whether it was an ad hoc effort after they pulled it off to get everybody in line. You see evidence that many of our world leaders were already going to these summits that were held by the Klaus Schwab and the his WEF, World Economic Forum. So it looks like they knew that, you know, they had to get everybody online, and everyone's online. So New York is no different from any other capital. It's just the nth degree of a lockdown here. It's not good.
It's the contrast too, because New York has this image, has this vibe, you know, it's fuck you, you know, hey, listen, like I'm looking out for my, you know, I'm busy here. I'm working, I'm doing all this stuff. And it's been taken away. I mean, it's been taken away from everybody, but to see it through the lens of my friends in New York City, it's the contrast of how it used to be versus, I mean, it's all, I mean, you can go to small town America and not notice a ton of differences. If you're not trying to interact with the people too much, but in New York, it's unavoidable. You go down, I mean, it's just hard to pretend like it's not happening. And we got through like the middle of the summer, and something interesting happened where we started off with this whole fuckery in March, and then it seemed like it fizzled out a little bit come around like June or so. And then this push, seemingly out of nowhere, to make the masks mandatory. And it felt to me like they were losing the narrative. Like people were out in public and they weren't seeing masks and they weren't seeing dead bodies stacked up. Grateful that we weren't, but we were promised dead bodies and we never saw them. So where are the refrigeration trucks and where's the overflowing hospitals? And there was no visual representation of this virus until that mask mandate came out. Mm-hmm. And it seems like once that happened, everything really changed. The psychological operation was kicked into overdrive. You talked about how this might be planned out. Well, of course it was planned out. We see Event 201. We see situations like that. We see lockstep going back a decade earlier. I mean, these people, if there's one thing we know about them, besides the fact that they're empathy deficient psychopaths, is that they're planners and they don't have a problem getting themselves together in a room and plotting out the course of humanity for the rest of us without any sort of input from us. So I wonder where it is, who's driving this? Let's talk about that. We've got the World Economic Forum, obviously. We've got the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as a component of this that shows up virtually everywhere you look. We have the United Nations. We know their history. Let's out these maniacs. Who's on your list here?
Yeah. Well, that's a huge question. And that's, of course, the essential question. You see, there's a couple components to it, so I'll answer it in a couple steps. We, with the age of the internet, the age of information, all the old bullshit narratives start collapsing because we can like sort of dismantle them and deconstruct them one at a time. And we find out that all these narratives, including the precious, you know, mm-hmm. narratives, they're not necessarily holding water. In fact, they're not holding any water. Okay. So, we know that the structures of our society, the political structure, the media structure, now the medical structure, the biomedical structure, the banking structure, it's all definitely by this one group. If it wasn't so consistent and so absolutely verifiable and documented and real and under every rock, they say, you know, then it would be unfair to say that. But that is what's happening. So I believe that it's driven largely by this money power. What is the money power and where is it centered? The center of the money power is not the Bill and Melinda Gates types. These people only have 120 billion or something like this now. It's growing quickly. The billionaires are the ones who, the trillionaires are the ones who have been at it a long time and have vaults with gold that is unimaginable amounts. And the secret trust system, which some estimates, you know, say that, oh, there's $13 trillion in the secret trust. There's far more dollars in the secret trust that governments don't have a right to examine and that were installed by the city of London some 200 for the past 200 years. We have this legal structure where all this money actually can be hidden. No one has a right to know about who it is. And when you look at the foundation structure of the United States and the trust structure that's throughout the world, centered in the city of London and put into all the tax havens such as, you know, Jersey, Cayman Islands, all this stuff. Okay, when you look at that, and you look at the structures of the foundations who are paying all these academics and all these former State Department officials, you know, when you are in office for 4 years, your slimy butt is in office for 4 years, then you're out and you're getting foundation money from our little friends. And this is universal because there are no foundations outside of, there are none. These are the only kinds of foundations. So there is no other foundation. So when you look at the foundation structure, John T. MacArthur, the Tides, all these, all of them go back to this money power that is hidden, because when you trace the money back through the very trans-jurisdictional, you know, because all of this stuff, they spread it out to like five jurisdictions, so, and five different administrations, and over 20 years, and they move it from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and through different business models. By the time you trace back and you try to find out, well, where's the money coming that's paying all these fucking scumbags? You can't find it.
Right.
And this is how it works. So it's the hidden billions. And believe me, Rothschilds aren't rolling around in 500 foot yachts that cost $20 billion. They have their estates and stuff like that, but they're spending their money on this kind of structure of our society. And of course, whatever child sex slaves, get them off. Right. So that's who's driving this thing up, the money power. And Bill and Melinda Gates and all the world leaders are just sitting there taking the money. That's it. Because, you know, you ask yourself, when I look at all the leaders who have signed on to this thing, and it's such a universally, everyone's signing on to it. And you have to think to yourself, come on, these people can't really believe, you know, it's if you can read. If you can read at this point, if you can read a mainstream source, even mainstream sources who blocked the information are now saying, well, you know, the PCR tests are actually fake. And oh, actually, the ventilators were there just to make the money and kill the people and all that. It's like the mainstream sources now, you know, read, guys, Cuomo, dear Cuomo, read, dear Corbyn. I mean, dear, what's his name over in, I can't even remember. You know,
Gavin Newsom.
Newsom, read. Can you read? And they can. They know it's a scam. They're taking the ish money. That's it.
Yeah, and there's a great documentary I watched called "The Spider's Web: The Second British Empire," and it talked about. It's all about the city of London. It's all about the banking at Jersey and Guernsey and Cayman and Bermuda and all these different networks that they have set up. And they talk about how the overt British Empire kind of fell apart in the 50s, and it kind of retreated more underground, and their control flowed instead more covertly through the financial system and this city of London and jurisdictions that were out of the reach of everyone. And they explained how much money was flowing through there, and they showed, you know, and I was in the Cayman Islands a while ago, and I was with this cab driver, and he said, hey, that building over there, see that little building? And it wasn't much to look at. He goes, there's 27,000 businesses that operate out of that building. I was like, I know what they're doing. I understand what this is. It's tempting. I think that maybe part of the plan or part of the arrangement is that if you're going to be this Bill Gates or a Mark Zuckerberg, you're going to sign on to one of these fake stories. I'm a freshman nerd in Harvard starting a game-changing technology company out of my dorm room who takes it public and with stolen technology and then uses my money to finance the rest of the world. It seems like it comes with strings attached. You get this money, you get this power, but your role is you got to recycle a portion of it back through the system, and it's going to flow into things that are going to shape society. And it's occurred to me lately that there's a weird thing that happens when you have all the money in the world, money to buy anything that you've ever wanted to buy times 1,000. You go looking for things that aren't for sale. you go looking for the public education system. You look for things, you try to shape society in a way that sort of fits with your warped view of society. And I feel like this year we've seen that. I think Bill and Melinda Gates and World Economic Forums, these are the out front boogeymen that we see, but God, you just know that the what do we want to call them? Bloodline banking families? Is that a fair? I mean, multi-generational banking families ruling this from behind the shadows. I feel like it pays. It's more advantageous for them to remain in the shadows and allow the front people to do the dirty work than it is for them to expose themselves and be on the chopping block, so to speak. Yeah.
Of course, they had to. I mean, and they realized that it was at the turn of the century, 20th century, 1900, the year 1900 on around there, that they decided, look, you know, I mean, especially because it was so obvious that they were, because prior to that, everyone said, well, okay, the Rothschilds are the richest family in the world. Okay. And then when the rise of America started happening, they realized it was such a fundamentally Christian nation that, you know, the Rothschilds would be, you know, strung up they would be hung by the trees. Okay. So, yes, they had to get intermediaries and proxies and they had to hide their wealth because, they're not particularly well liked throughout history and for probably good reason. And again, none of this is anti-Semitic in the slightest. You're allowed to, you know, we're allowed to be critical of any group that has excesses. And so if I am I've spent 20 years criticizing the Knights of Malta that were infiltrating the CIA and so mischievous throughout the world, getting us involved in war. And it wasn't just the Knights of Malta, but that was the sort of flagship sort of secret society, let's say, that really represented this Christianized version of the kind of mischief that was inimical to our basic fundamental rights and freedoms. Okay, well, now it's the bankers. And yeah. Bottom line is, you can see this very easily because, again, every single head of the NSA, CIA, FBI in this country, every one of them, not a few, every one of them is taking the money from this source. Mm-hmm. Every one of them. So, like, for example, Mike Pompeo, who literally has a Star of David on his knee pads, is definitely plotting his trajectory right to that money that is going right from Israel, right from the U.S. taxpayer dollars. And this is the funny part about it is they don't even have to pay for it. They get the American people to pay for it. They just extract the money right out of the U.S. worker and the families of taxpayers, you know, the family who's struggling to make ends meet, and they just grab another $4 billion. And that's the money that the Pompeos are going to get, and that Mike Rogers, Petraeus, they're all going to get that money. And so when you're in office and you see your predecessor living high on the hog of money, but which isn't, it's actually American workers' money, right? This is the most obscene, and I'd like to say, hey, it would be nice to be able to find some other country and say, you know, well, look at the success that Israel has had in milking the American cow, because that's what it is, a big cow, and the udder is the treasury, and they just get the goy to milk it, right? Why don't you, savior, foreign nation, do the same? And then you look at him, it's like, China? Well, no, because we don't want to live in a Chinese world either. That's even worse, or about the same. I mean, Russia maybe? Yeah, Russia seems to be a little bit more benign than the rest of them. Yeah. So even I have a lot more trust in like Putin than I do in any of these, you know, Chavez Goy over here. Yeah, basically, he's more honorable man. Got more honor in his pinky because he's actually tried. He can't, a lot of these a lot a guy like Putin You could say what you want about him, but he's more concerned about his role in the history books than because, you know, he's got enough money. He's not out. He's not serving the bankers. No, I don't think so. He's cares about his view in history, actually.
Yeah, it's funny. You just look at who is demonized in our media and invert it and go, well, if they're demonized so badly by our media, which has zero trust, if they're hated so much, I just invert. It's like NewsGuard. NewsGuard puts a green rating on something or a red rating on something. When I see the red rating, I go, that's the source. Exactly. That's the source I want to get into. If you say red, I say good for you. And what we've witnessed here over the last, three decades at least, is this pushing of the goalposts where you're no longer, it's the old Voltaire thing, to know who rules over you, just find who you cannot criticize. And we're getting into a place, I found this really disturbing, and you can, and people can feel however they want about our role with our most trusted ally in the Middle East or our hypochondriac cousin, as I named a chapter of one of my books, whatever you want. But the directive that has come out that we are not allowed to criticize anything that happened, anything that country does, justifiable criticism or not, is such a red flag to me. It just seems to me, it's like if you were trying, you couldn't draw more attention to yourself if you tried. And when we came out of this government shutdown that was about, God, I don't know, maybe it was 2 years ago, there was an extended government shutdown. The first bill they passed, number one bill, was
a limitation
on criticism of the state of Israel. Isn't that? I mean, it's just showed me this is where your priorities are. If this is bill number one after the government has literally been shut down, and you think this is the number one priority, you're either on your knee pads, or you're pandering, or you're, frankly, you're a fucking traitor, as far as I'm concerned, for this to be the priority. I'm not saying that we should allow people to say, untrue thing. I am saying that. You say whatever the fuck you want, actually. As long as it's anchored in some version of truth and it's your opinion, you should be able to say what you want. But this overarching protection racket is so disgusting to me. And it makes me more curious than I would have been normally. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what actually drives, you had made two points, though. That's what drives a lot of my language. A lot of my language is actually very intentional, and it's not not sloppy, contrary to what some who I say, hey, I'd like to interview you, and they're like, well, I don't know, you're a little too free with the language than I can deal with, because I have a career and books to sell or whatever, and I understand that. I actually have the capability of having a very tempered version of my language, and then I have this more experimental version that I pull out, but all of it is true, right, verifiable, and consistent with logical forms of speech that you would apply to any group. So if I could say, hey, we should kill all the Christian bankers, no one would care. Right. If I said, hey, we should take all the Islamic bankers into the street and open their guts up and eviscerate them, right? People, it wouldn't raise an eyebrow. If I say, we should grab the Jewish bankers, drag them out in the street, open their guts up and pull their intestines out, people will get unhinged. And so that's specifically why I'm doing it, is to sort of as a legal test, as an experimental language test, and I experiment with both forms of the word. I will say we should eviscerate the Jewish bankers. I'll also say that's the adjective Jewish. Because that's the only religion that has a separate adjective and noun. So you have Jew bankers and then Jewish bankers. Okay, if I say we should eviscerate the Jew bankers, oh my God,
it's over for you.
Okay, so we don't have that. You're a Christian banker. A Christian is both a noun and an adjective. Islamic is noun and adjective in one word. And when you look up the etymology of that, why there's a separation there. It literally goes back to Old English, where they thought that Jews charged too much. And this is from the Dictionary of Etymology, so it's not like Harry Vox making this up. That they thought that there was that they charged too much excessive usurious interest, right? Mm-hmm. And so they called that practice Jewish. Okay, so gotcha. Yeah. Okay, so nobody's raised these points because, again, everybody's terrified. So since that the laws, as they approach us, will, because we have laws that say that we can't have things, we can't have ex post facto punishment, right? So I'm saying it all right now. That has to be said so that generations from now, there'll be this body of work that people could look back at and say, he spoke very frankly about the problem, because I believe that within maybe 2 years, something like that, everything that I'm saying will be a punishable by prison in the United States, like it is in Germany. So.
I totally agree. I fully expect you to be, you know, just radioactive in the eyes of certain people, or at the very least, you know, people that are like, God, you know, I mean, I agree with what he's saying, or I think he makes great points, but my mere association would be suicide for me. And therefore, and so that's a devious form of censorship. It's the most devious form, I would say, is this self-censorship that people now start to put into place. And we see this. No place is it more evident than on social media. And of course, one of the threads that's running through, you know, the whole year of 2020, the vaccine, you know, the rollout of the fear in China, this imposition in March of 2 weeks to flatten the curve, the push towards the masks, the dancing nurses, the whole thing, everything had. The theme of social media ran like a thread throughout the entire year. And you start to see the removal of people from social media that had any sort of alternative view on this. So it's not to say, I mean, when you say a couple of years from now, you think that maybe that, you know, the words that you say will be illegal. I think you're right. You don't need a roadmap to figure that out. You can just look at what's currently been happening as far as the demonization of certain groups. You know, oh, these people are Q people. I mean, say what you want about Q people, but it's like they made them out to be like they were running lynch mobs or something like that. And at the expense, while simultaneously, God forbid you bring up a point about Black Lives Matter being an organization, Black Lives Matter, registered trademark corporation, you know what I mean, getting all their money from it. And so you see, like, okay, we're being corralled on the internet. We're being systematically told what we can and cannot say. It's okay to, you know, even the most preposterous things. You can't protest, or you can't go out into the streets. You can't go out into the grocery store unless it's to protest in support of Black Lives Matter. I mean, even the most asleep retard is like, what the fuck is this? I mean, this is so contradictory and insane that everybody should be awake to it. And yet, we're not. Is this an intentional conditioning, a dumbing down of society? Is this has got to be planned well in advance, is it not?
Yeah. Well, it looks like they've been working on the left liberal class for quite some time, because it was always, you know, I'm liberal. I'm a liberal guy. Always have been. I grew up in the conservative fundamentalist America, and it's just a nightmare, you know. And they knew that the fascists knew that unless they could get the left liberal, unless they could kind of destroy the concept of that, because it was always the left liberal who was the one who would be on the lookout for this kind of fascist stuff going on, right? Well, now they're able to, again, this goes back to the age of information. Actually, this is a long answer. So the age of information happens where access to information. So the liberal class got to see with their own eyes what was going on, killing children in Israel, and it's a bigoted, apartheid, fascist state. So, okay. So that didn't sit well with the liberal mindset. But that kind of violence as long as it's as long as you could con like the Christian evangelical idiots down there, they don't care. Right. If, as long as you link up Judeo with the word Christian, and that's what they did in the late 70s to the 19, you had the congressman Kemp, people like that going, you never get a sentence out of Congressman Jack Kemp, the former football star, if he that didn't have the word Judeo-Christian heritage in it. So literally every paragraph. So that was this push because of the age of information to shift, because they knew the liberal class was going to abandon them because they have a brain. Anyone with two brain cells will abandon this repulsive, vile, violent Israel. It's repulsive, repugnant to any thinking person. Okay. So they knew they were going to lose the left liberals, right? So then they had to focus on the conservative Christian deep South evangelicals. And so now you have this series of reversals so that you have, okay, so let me get this straight. It's the liberal class who normally who's skeptical of Israel and normally would be on guard against this kind of fascist push that's been going on. They're the ones now cheering for the mandatory vaccines, cheering for the deep state. And in an ironic reversal, it's the Christian fundamentalists who are sucking Israel's dick, who are the ones now who are skeptical of the mandatory and of the fascist stuff. So you got these cross reversals happening where left goes right and then left again, and then right goes left, then right again. And everyone just throws up someone like me just throws up their hands and says, I'm just going to get my AR-15 and, you know, as many rounds as you can buy, you know, because ultimately in the end, I mean, you know, when you see Klaus Schwab, you know, the fourth industrial revolution, you know, you will not have any children, will not have any toys. They will have one toys that the billionaire children will give them, and they will clean the spit off the toy. And when they are done, you want to just get a sniper rifle and deal with this problem. And it's the same with all of them. I'm not advocating, because I know you have to do this legal disclaimer. You didn't have to do that 20 years ago. You say, get a sniper rifle and knock these guys. But now you can't say that because that's a TOS violation. So here's the perfunctory disclaimer. I'm not advocating that people get sniper rifles and knock these scumbags off. No, I would never do that. Nope. Wink, wink, nod, nod. Because that's violation, you know? Fuck. All I'm saying is that people better get ready, because, you know, this is textbook by the book. A real deal. Sci-fi grade fascism. Basically, yeah. This is authoritarian, totalitarian fascism. And, get your guns ready.
I always thought we'd recognize fascism when we saw it, you know, that everybody would recognize it and snuff it out immediately. Or we look back on, we look back on World War II and we go, how could something... I'm going off of the official story. So let's just go off the official story. And we know that that's flawed, but how could this happen? How could you take these people that are these German people that are just minding their own business? They went through hell in World War I, had their, you know, currency destroyed and trying to rebuild it. How could they then move into this scenario incrementally and then be goose stepping and shooting people and trying to take over the world? And you think, oh, well, that would never happen to me. I'd stand up for those people. I'd hide Anne Frank in my attic. You know, I'd be on the good side of all that. And then you go to the grocery store, you know, today, and you see mask Karens and these people that are, you know, enthusiastically cheering this sort of this state overreach of this medical martial law, medical fascism. And it starts to occur to you, now I understand how it happens. It doesn't happen overnight. It's incremental, but you can, if you have the right game, you know, verbal game, if you have the right ability to connect with people, you can convince people to do all sorts of things that you never thought that they would do before. I mean, if we were having this conversation 12 months earlier, and I was saying, you know, what's going to be coming is masks and this and that, you'd be like, get the fuck out of here with that. There's no way. But
well, I wouldn't because
well, you
I
wouldn't
was...
be because you actually you know how it's coming you can be. I mean, you understand this, you know, this totalitarian tiptoe and how it works. But I'd say like the average person would just be like, we would never do that. We're Americans. We're home of the brave and land of the free. It's like, really? We are? Because I don't know about that. I don't know about most people, but I quit believing that sales pitch a long time ago. And in fact, if anything came out of 2020 for me, it was a profound understanding that we aren't as exceptional as we have been made to believe we are. And we've been living off of our reputation for a very long time. And when it comes to totalitarian tyranny, we can play ball with the best of them. I mean, we can get in line and get our mandatory vaccines and shame the shit out of other people better than the Germans could or the Chinese or the Russians or anyone. I mean, fucking A, man, we're America. We can do it. So it's just a weird, this slip into medical fascism. You would think, you would hope, you would assume it would come at the expense after wars and battles and everything. We let it happen. We let them in. We opened up our doors. We isolated ourselves. We volunteered for this nonsense. And I've never been more disappointed about the American people than I have been in the year 2020.
Yeah. Well, it has laid, that's the saddest part. It's laid bare the paucity of integrity that this country has. I hate to say it about my fellow countrymen, but it does make it quite clear that a lot of people don't have what it takes to be a solid person. I'm sorry. I mean, and whatever the reasons were, you can say as a social scientist, you can say, well, you know, these people know not what they do because they're subject to the most intensive propagandizing that any human has ever been subjected to. But there's a philosophical theory that is based somewhat on utilitarianism that I'm working on, but it's a kind of a reverse engineering of it, loosely based on like pragmatism and utilitarianism. But instead of, but it's a way to personally conduct your opinions and views of humanity, not so much a way for you personally to act and behave. It's for you to react to what everyone else is acting and behaving upon, you know, and forcing their stuff onto you. And so the theory goes like this. It doesn't really matter how the people got that way. It matters that their boot is on your neck. And right. So they are the enemy. And I hate to speak like this. Now, here's though a caveat that I must say, though, is that it's hard actually to gauge exactly how deep this widely dispersed so-called set of beliefs really goes in people. For example, I'm doing a lot of experiments where I have this like this about 30-second spiel I give to somebody when they tell me to put a mask on. And I tell you, the way it works is we have an attention deficit, attention span problem with people. Yeah. That when they tell you to put on your mask, because I don't wear masks, right? So when they tell you to put on your mask and you have 3 seconds, not more than three, to begin to speak so that they put their mouth shut and listen to for another 3 seconds, which is a total of 6 seconds. Because if in that first 3 seconds you have not hooked them with something that's compelling enough to get them to keep their fucking mouth shut so that they can hear yet another 3 seconds of it. So the first thing is, so, you know, and I'm working on one of those first 3 seconds to get them to keep their clams shut, right? So it's something like, I've tried a few of them. One that's most effective is all, but you have to do it fast. All peer-reviewed medical studies prior to the scamdemic say that masks are not effective. So that is the first 3 seconds. And then it's so it's sort of technical. It doesn't attack them. It's informational. And maybe they'll keep their mouth shut, because as soon as their mouth opens, the whole thing is over, because the brain shuts off and they're just unloading whatever they've been told from the ish media. Okay. So then the second 3 seconds has to be informational, compelling, and grab them. But if you've got if you get past the first 6 seconds, which are the that's the big trial, right? You have a possibility to go for 30 seconds and explain to them that that the second 3 seconds, I usually do something like, this is a scam by the billionaire bankers. So they're doubling their money and you're losing your money. Check your bank account and that'll prove it. Right. So that's the second 3 seconds. So the right. First 3 seconds is medical informational. Second is check your bank account. The billionaires are doubling their money. You're losing all your money. Then you're not attacking them. You're not saying, shut the fuck up, you retard. No, you're giving them informational based stuff. Then you have a possibility to go for now 10, 15 seconds and start giving them the science of what's going on here. This is the biggest con game ever pulled. This is an authoritarian crackdown on our rights and liberties and stuff. And you can start reaching out. When I do this, I notice some of these, because when this first came out, I would go to the checkout line and I wouldn't have my mask on. And if somebody said, put your mask on, I said, no, I'm not going to put your mask on. You notice that the people have this sort of gang mentality. One person starts yelling at you and then they all start yelling at you. And then I'd be sitting there yelling back at 20 people. Right. And, one of them is going to just come up and slug you or something like that. Okay. So what I'm noticing now, though, is that, and I'm getting somewhere with this, so I'm gonna get somewhere. What I'm noticing now is that the people now are more open to actually listening to that first 6 seconds and maybe the additional 20 seconds where they previously were not. Okay. So I'm noticing that some of the people on the line, as I'm giving the diatribe to the checkout girl who just told me to put on a mask and I start the diatribe with her, I notice that some of the people yes, I'm getting it. They still have their masks on. They still are wearing the mask, but not everybody who's wearing the mask is doing it because they're a total mind slave. Some of them are doing it because it's just like more expedient to go through sometimes I'll have the mask here and just in case it's going to be a fist fight or something. Right. Okay. So, but I'll keep it down here, but I'll keep it at the ready in case,
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that this is a process called, I hope I'm not going on too long, but this is a scientific process outlined. It's called the spiral of silence. One girl, one woman writer has written about it, that people, of course, and we know this is just basic social sciences, the lemming effect or whatever it is, that people are afraid to be the standout. They're afraid. They think that everybody is captured by this particular belief system, and so they too then therefore have to also be captured by this belief system. And no, what we want to start giving examples that not all of us are captured, and that that many more are not as captured as we think they are. So the idea that it's broadly spread propaganda, broadly spread appearances of this COVID slavery, but I think it's not deep because it is such a scam that it's I think it's a surface, and I think once you get into the surface, you can, especially now, rest some people out of it. Some people no, but some people yes. More.
Well, it's funny you say that in your explanation about, being in the store and everything, because recently in the last couple of days, we've seen this video of a lady that was at she had to have been at like a CVS or a Walgreens somewhere. And she was like, I've had enough. I'm done with this. And there's three doctors standing, 6 feet apart and maybe two customers. And somebody's filming this interaction. And she's very calmly saying, it's all, this is ridiculous, guys. It's all bullshit. But she did it calmly and rationally, and she didn't get mad. She just said, I've come to the realization that this is all fake and I'm done with it. So you guys can tell me to put the masks on and you can do all this stuff, but you're going to need to, take this analysis yourself. I'm just telling you I'm done. And it was very powerful the way she was doing it because she was calm. You could tell she was somebody that had found either her breaking point or her strength. I don't know, maybe both. But she had made this decision that she was no longer going to play the game and she wasn't going to live in fear. And I found it a very compelling video to watch. But then it reminded me of the rollout of the masks in the UK. And who did that? But it was a doctor, but it wasn't a medical doctor. It was a psychologist. And so it was like, shouldn't we be having the medical doctors rolling out the mask, mandates? And in the UK, they're like, well, we've got a different version of this. It's going to come from somebody with a background in psychiatry. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. But not to say that that's better or worse. I just thought it was different. In the United States, we have our own set of problems with a guy that you've done extensive work on, and I want to get your take on the role of Fauci. Now, I've been very critical of Fauci for obvious reasons. I think he deserves it. I think it's undeniable that he deserves a tremendous amount of criticism, but I withhold a fraction of my criticism for the general public as well, because we play a role in this too. We need to be better about digging into who these people are that magically appear on the scene as saviors, Bill Gates and Birx and Fauci and all these people. We need to do a better job of questioning, who are you? You show up on this podium and you tell me to wear a mask and you tell me to do all this stuff. I see you at the Nationals game without your mask. I see you being a giant hypocrite. And then you start to hear about the AIDS community in the 80s. And you go, they know who Fauci is. And you go, why don't you come up here and tell us about who? And they say, oh, have a seat. We'll tell you everything you need to know. Who's Fauci? What's his role in this?
He's a kid who is a misanthrope. He hates humanity. He hates humanity. Why? Because growing up in Bensonhurst, which is one of the toughest, most racist, homophobic neighborhoods in Brooklyn, especially in the 50s when he grew up, as a 4'8" man, right? An even smaller boy, right? Certainly not going to be on the basketball team. He would have been the butt of all the jokes of the children. Mm-hmm. They would have harangued him and harassed him, and he would have developed quite a strong hatred for humankind. Just exactly the perfect formula that the billionaires could exploit to get someone that they could rely on, because they too have a deep hatred for the common man. Okay. So you get a guy like Fauci, who is not a technically astute guy. And we know this because Nobel Prize winners like Carrie Mullis comes out and says he's a know-nothing guy. And you have all these doctors and you have all these really qualified people that say he's a creep. You have Dr. Judy Mikovits, and you have the guy who he even, you know, if you look at the speech that Fauci gave where he warned that Trump was going to have a surprise, and I think everybody's seen that speech by now, and this was given in 2017 in January or February, I think it was right either before or right after the inauguration of Trump, right? Okay. Whereas Fauci gives his big warning, Trump is going to be in for a big surprise. Just about 40 seconds before he said that, in that very same speech, he said that the previous director of the NIH or whatever, the NIAID that he was, the previous director there, who himself was a Nobel Prize winner in science, right, said that this my guy who comes after me is not going to have anything to do because we've vanquished the concept of infectious diseases. Fauci gets in there and he's, we'll see about that. Okay. Wow. So Fauci works for this racist, homophobic, less homophobic now because the billionaires themselves, they like little boys as much as they like little girls. I promise you that. Okay. So he works for this strain of power. And we know this because we've seen him in the photographs with Gates' father, the eugenicist, mm-hmm. in that photograph. That's a very important photograph. That was back in 1981. That's how old it is. You've got Rockefeller. You've got Soros. You've got Gates. You've got David Attenborough, Turner. You got the grand dames of the Illuminati, which is the old Astor. One of the Astors there. And, you know, okay, if there was ever a representation of the Illuminati, it was that, right? Yeah. You know, whatever you think about it or not, you know, they don't necessarily literally call themselves the Knights of the Illuminati, but actually in some circles they actually do. But that's another conversation. I don't even want to go there. Because, you know, academics will not give credence to it. I've been doing this for 30 years. I know exactly the terms that they call themselves, but whatever. I'm not even going to go down that road. But they've all made comments that there's just too many people in this world. We have to eliminate a vast swath of humanity. And then you've got Fauci in the room, who's the guy who's in control of who lives and who dies via this invisible enemy now that you cannot prove and all this. He's a bioterrorist, and he spent 30 years of his career designing bioterror weapons to study and research to make the world a safer place. And this is what I've said. I made this point, and this is a point that people should understand about how compartmentalization works and how easy it is to get. I'll tell this little story. It's a different each time because I don't memorize any of my stuff, but you could have 10 million people working on devastating diseases that can wipe out humankind, as long as you give them the language to and saying, well, we're doing this so that we can study it to protect us from it. That's all you have to do. And as long as you pay their salary, you can have tens of millions of people say, oh, yes, I developed a virus that kill you in a second. I'm doing a good job. You know, this is how, and this is why many scientists are saying, you know, all these researchers that are at the under Fauci at the NIAID and through the programs that they administer through the Department of Defense, DARPA, and the Level 4 labs, all of these scientists are working on stuff that can destroy humankind, deadly bioweapons that are in contravention to all the international treaties against this kind of stuff. They're doing it under the rubric that they're studying it to make the world a better place. And scientists from the American Federation of Sciences and all these things are saying, they could flip this in a second. This is dual use, they call it in science, dual use. So it's like, well, no, it's like, oh, yes, we need to make mosquitoes that could fly around and infect everybody with a safe thing. And they could just put Ebola in that insect. And it's not a safe thing anymore. You know, so this is what's happening. Fauci's in charge. He is a bioterrorist, and it's very easy. But you see, he's obviously has more power than the president of the United States, because the president of the United States had to put his knee pads on and say, even after expressing extreme dissatisfaction, and you know Trump is a vindictive guy, Fauci slighted Trump so many times, Trump didn't even have the power to get rid of Fauci. Yeah. That tells you that Fauci has the full backing of the billionaires and, more importantly, the trillionaires. That's
And this is where we get into this blending of psychopaths, where you get the Fauci role and the guys that he's friends with, Bill Gates, obviously, and then they start to pull in guys like Jeffrey Epstein. And Jeffrey Epstein donates money to Marvin Minsky and all of these guys. He donates $30 million to Harvard for the study of evolutionary dynamics, which is basically game theory and role playing of eugenics operations. And like you said, it's like, as long as you disguise this in, we're studying this so that it doesn't come back to bite us in the ass, then you can do whatever you want. Because if you were saying, we're studying how to cull the population, doesn't really go over very well. So we find this blending of scientists that found their way into Epstein's circle. And a lot of people scratched their heads. They didn't understand why you know, guys like Ben Goertzel were getting involved with, you know, making these. If you remember that Sophia robot that came out in Saudi Arabia, who was granted citizenship in this publicity stunt, you know, the back of her head is open. It's like a circuit board. She wasn't made to look actually real, just real enough. And it, of course, the irony of Saudi Arabia granting citizenship and rights to a female robot is beyond ridiculous. But that aside, you start to see Epstein tie in with Ben Goertzel developing the Little Sophia robot, which is a 14-inch commercial use doll geared towards girls 8 years and up for emotional intelligence that's wired with microphones and RFID, geotagging and cameras and all the bells and whistles. I mean, just the worst person in the world. And I want to get into this because the common thread that sort of led these people together, this Fauci character, this little, weaselly, dangerous human being, his role with Epstein and Epstein's role with another weaselly, elfish, dangerous guy in Les Wexner. What's Les Wexner's connection to these operations? He seems to me like he might be at the have a seat at the table when it comes to discussions of things like this.
Yeah. You know what it is? I think all these people are more they are instruments of a greater power. They are themselves not the instigators of this. They're just instruments. I believe in many of these cases, a lot of these guys were just slaves of their own libido. So in case of Wexner, I actually believe that he was just a horny old Jewish guy who just liked to screw young girls, basically. And that, they're a part of, there's people that have done a lot more work on Wexner. I don't see him as the central figure here. I see him as just another instrument of the banking powers that need, look, this whole thing, you know, you used to have to only peel back a layer or two of this onion to get to the truth. Now you got to peel back 5 different, 10, 20 different layers because each one is deceptive, each one's disguising, and then you peel back a layer and it's a hyperspace portal to another another area of this conspiracy. Basically, the overarching structure is there's too many people. They're getting out of control. We have to eliminate them. We have to control people. Right? This is just what the billionaires think. We can't just say mandatory international ID because the mandatory vaccine is a way for them to install a universal ID, a UID for every human to track and trace every human. Wexner is not the best you get out of a Wexner is he'll invest in one of the companies, one of the Israeli startup companies that's going to be managing this project. Okay. But the bigger picture is that it's a bigger picture emerges in these white papers of the Jewish think tanks in Washington and Tel Aviv, where, and again, under many layers of onions, so they say, well, one of the things they say is they have to use the word inclusion. Everyone's thinking, oh, this is great. We use the word inclusion and we can fucking fuck you up, destroy everything. Okay. Right. So they say, okay, how do we get mandatory IDs? Well, mandatory ID, the ID 2020 that UN is talking about, and several other, you know, every fascist authoritarian piece of shit's coming out of the woodwork with their own biometric control paradigm for you, you know. The World Economic Forum has their own ID, and the UN has their own ID. Okay. They say they have to sell this to people and say, well, this is inclusion so that people can be included in the financial system and banking system. The billionaires no sooner want Joe and Jane or Juan in Latin America included in the banking system than they want Donald Duck to be included. You know, yeah. This is just the language of that they're usurping the left liberal identity politics language in order to implement a very, very, very chillingly frightening authoritarian control state, just like in the science fiction novels. Yeah. Okay. So Wexner is a very small player, more interested. I mean, because you could see where his interests were, clothing lines. And then I had a conversation with Maria Farmer, she was talking about how there's in the mansion that he donated or gave, or that Epstein bought off him for a dollar, whatever it is, gave it to him. The cameras would have been installed in that thing when Wexner had it.
Yeah.
So Wexner is basically a horny old geezer, peeping Tom guy. And apparently there's some stories going around. I don't know the verifiability of any of the ones that the Victoria's Secret also had cameras there too. So, for sure, the mansions and the planes that Epstein was using as the way to capture and control and blackmail our political class. I mean, there's no better way to do that than to get them on camera having sex with a 15-year-old girl, and they'll all do it. You know, this is the amazing part about it. It's like these guys are so, and this shows you how vacuous and empty these people are, is because if they don't realize that if you're in a big room with a 15-year-old girl in Epstein's mansion, after Epstein has already been indicted and gone to jail for this shit, and then here comes the 15-year-old girl, and this room is very large and has a lot of nooks and crannies, and if you're not aware that the likelihood that there's a fucking camera in there, you know, so you're playing with your own life. It means the judgment of all of these world leaders is so bad that they can't even control their libido. And these are the people who we're entrusting, yeah. You know, that have imposed themselves, let's say, because we don't trust them. You know, they've imposed themselves on us. So the players are not the Wexners. The players are, like I say, the usual suspects, the Rothschilds. It's when you go up higher in the money scheme, and so your viewers don't pay attention to what Google tells you when they Google, and all the Snopes says, oh, yeah, no, Rothschilds, they don't have any money anymore. Oh, Snopes. Yeah, we're Snopes, you know. So you have to understand that this is a bigger picture. Epstein was a small, small part in a big, big conspiracy. He was the guy that just got you to have sex. And, you know, then they own you. Because what are you going to do? You're going to go to jail.
Yeah. It's crazy to me that you know, we know about Bill Gates' relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, and I have speculated about this, and I'm always clear to make sure I use the word speculation.
Oh, I see.
Not
I
about think that, but although I'm not saying that didn't happen. I'm just saying that if you got $100 billion and you're friends with a guy that's running a brownstone operation that has all the goods on everybody, and in your mind, you're a couple years ahead of everybody else, and you know that you're about to unveil a vaccine-related scam on the world that will go down in history as legendary. Would you not purchase a copy of the blackmail files from everybody that you may need in the future, right? The heads of the, you know, you've got politicians, you've got scientists. This is a perfect opportunity for Bill Gates to get the goods on everybody just in case. I mean, not that he doesn't finance all these people anyway, all the media companies. I have to remind people the MS and MSNBC. MSNBC stands for Microsoft. It's like people are like, well, how could Bill Gates get away with this? Like he's got media cover. You know, he's given them money. I wonder this. I was watching a report that you were doing about talking about vaccine patents. And this is where I want to wrap it up with this is the vaccine patents and how this is being used as, how the role of these vaccines. And of course, I'm very familiar with how dirty they are, the Vaers court and all of that, knowing well in advance that any sort of vaccine push will be masqueraded as a benefit for humanity when it'll be anything but. But what's the background on some of the patents on these vaccines? Because everybody is turned into an expert on vaccines, and I've written a couple books and I've mentioned it. I'm not a doctor, but I don't need to be a doctor. In fact, I've always sort of explained that I feel like I'm in a better position to criticize the science behind vaccines because I didn't go through 8 years of medical school. I didn't work in the, you know, I didn't go to a Rothschild, you know, funded institution that's telling me this is the only form of medicine. So I feel like for guys like us that are on the outside looking in, we're actually uniquely qualified, more qualified to call this out because we see it. But what's happening with these patents and where, you know, and what is it that we should know about this in order to educate people around us?
Yeah. Well, you know, there used to be a term in the 1970s and prior to that, there was this term, it's got cobwebs on it. You don't hear much about it, but the term was conflict of interest. You know, and we used to talk about that. Yeah. You don't hear much about that these days because the United States is one big seething, glistening, broiling conflict of interest. Okay. The ruling class. But this, it's not like there's not enough, even World Economic Forum documents. I mean, I was reading something in the Wall Street Journal. I think it was. Again, and this stuff is starting to leak out into the mainstream media as much as, you know, they're like, we did our job in covering up everything. But, you know, people already know it now, so we might as well start talking about this stuff, you know. And these articles are years old, some of them. And there was even World Economic Forum has said, you know, these people that are holding the patents are for these vaccines are the ones making the recommendations for their use. And, you know, we should guard against undue conflict of interest, you know, right. Again. Yeah. So like it's a consistent theme. And the bottom line is it's like the heroin dealer being in charge of recommending, you know, abstinence for doing heroin, or, you know, or the heroin dealer in charge of the rehabilitation clinic, you know, it's just not going to work out, you know? So, Fauci, the CDC hold innumerable patents. Mm-hmm. I don't see how that could be. And I don't see how that, first of all, any patent that's in the US government, any proceeds from that patent shouldn't go to a division or any person working there. That should be equally distributed among the American people who paid for the research in order to gain that patent. And that's how it worked. When I worked for Grumman Aerospace, before it was Northrop Grumman for a while. And we had signed things that if we developed something and invented something during our time at Grumman, that was Grumman's property, mm-hmm. basically. And the same thing should be with if you're a vaccine developer on the government paycheck, that's the research you're doing on behalf of the American people. Okay, so whatever, we don't have this structure anymore. You know, it's just a complete corruption everywhere. So, you know, there was a couple points I wanted to make about this the vaccine and also I did want to talk about the antibody dependent enhancement, which is a key for everybody to understand what's going to happen and is already happening. And it seems to me that if you mind me going into this,
please,
whole
do. Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. I want to hear all about it.
Okay, so you have to ask yourself, here's the questions that need to be answered. At what level in government or in scientific institutions, research institutions, at what level would be required to purposefully develop either vaccines or the viruses themselves that would be strong candidates for containing this antibody-dependent enhancement? It's a terrible term. I don't like that term because it sounds really good, right? Enhancement. I want that. You know, right. Like, no, you don't. The antibody-dependent enhancement, in case any of your viewers haven't heard of it yet, is a catastrophe for the human race. And it could possibly be what the central strategic goal of this mass vaccination is, to install a back door. This is what people have to think about when they look at this vaccine. The vaccines may possibly be, and I'm coming out right and saying they are a backdoor. They are a backdoor into your immune system that any number of nefarious players, and we know that there's no shortage of them these days, can easily exploit with a slight variation of the Challenger virus. So to run through it quick, they give you the needle. This is how vaccination is supposed to work. And then I'll explain how it could be a disaster. Okay. The way it's supposed to work, you get the needle, which is an attenuated form of the virus, the outer shell of the virus that has all those knobs that stick off. You see that pretty picture of the coronavirus, which everybody wants a nice little necklace of, because it's right, nice and pretty, right? All those shapes that are sticking off them, they essentially use those shapes and they stick them in your arm without all that stuff that's on the inside of that ball, because that's the nasty stuff that's alive and that goes and replicates and kills you. But the surface antigens is what they want. And I don't want to get too technical here because it's not important. I want to use really simple words. And this is what I'm trying to do everywhere, because too many people start talking about surface antigen, FC receptors and everything. And people's eyes roll to the back of their heads. Yeah. So they put this dead, attenuated, like weak version of this stuff into your body. Then your antibodies start, your immune system creates these antibodies that recognize those shapes, attach to those shapes, and prevent it from entering the cells and doing their dirty business. Okay. In this thing called antibody dependent enhancement. It's also called vaccine dependent enhancement. It's called vaccine immune enhancement. It's called many things, but the ultimate technical term is ADE, antibody dependent enhancement. What happens is they stick the needle in you, right? With that junk on it, right? Mm-hmm. The poison in you, right? Your bodies make antibodies, but these antibodies that attach to it, which are normally, when they're working good, they're called neutralizing antibodies, which is a good word. Means it neutralizes it, prevents it from entering the cells and doing its dirty business. These things are non-neutralizing antibodies. And in fact, they facilitate the entry and attachment of that virus to your immune system, to your macrophages and your monocytes. It's not important, the technical terms. It just facilitates entry into the cells in your body. And once there, they start rapidly replicating and you get upper respiratory inflammation. And typically Americans don't understand, but that most death is caused by inflammatory disease, they call it. It's just general inflammation is what causes pretty much 90% of all things throughout history. That if you can, that immune system diseases are inflammatory diseases. Heart diseases in many cases are inflammatory, which means that the cell structures are damaged. They're traumatized and they inflame, and that's not a good thing. Okay. Now, here's the dangerous part. We know that the people that are developing all this stuff are bad actors. Mm. They're not good people. They're dangerous people. They are not your friends. They have spoken for 70 years about the need to get rid of us. They have spoken. They have founded organizations that were based on this idea that, you know, we got to get rid of Negroes. There's too many of them. All this stuff. This is where William Gates Sr. comes from. Yeah. Margaret Sanger's Planned Parenthood, where she says, we hope they don't find out that Planned Parenthood is actually about getting rid of Negroes. And then that's Bill Gates's father's. Right. Okay. So we know what these people's attitudes are. When you have billions of dollars, do you think that I'm going to believe that when Gates got together with Epstein, because this is Gates' excuse, he said that they were there to finance a billion-dollar program to help end-stage patients in third world countries who are on their deathbeds to help them live longer, help them live a few weeks. That was supposedly what his excuse, that was when they pressed him, because first he denied that he was hanging out and flying around with Epstein and flying around. Gates denied that. Then when they said, dude, we have your name on it. We have proof. You were there. We have a photograph of you. Stop lying, right? The New York Times shot an arrow across his bow, shot a shot across the bow. Because if you have New York Times saying that in October of last year, say, dude, you were in Epstein's house. That's a warning to Bill Gates from the billionaire saying, you do what you are told, my friend, because New York Times doesn't put a full 4-page story with photographs of Gates with Epstein unless that was a message to Gates from the people who are more powerful than him, because that story doesn't surface in America. Okay, so you know all these people hate humanity, and they now have the ability, once they get this back door into your immune system, because they've discovered that just spraying contagion is not enough to kill people. In fact, people that have a healthy immune system can actually fight off most of this junk that these guys are designing. But when they give you the vaccine, you're 10 to 100 times more susceptible and likely to get this cytokine storm, and it kills you very quickly. Yeah. Now, I don't want to hog too much time, but it's a very important part here that I'm trying to articulate so that people at least have the language or some of the simple terms to understand. It's a backdoor, and that they will have deniability when a year from now or 2 years from now, tens of millions of people start dying. They can simply say, when people like me are saying, that's the antibody-dependent enhancement, that's what's happening here. They can simply say, nope, this is a variation on the this. And they're already introducing the mutation concept. They're already doing it in England and say, oh, yep, mutation, because they're conditioning people to accept the idea that a mutation will come. And that's exactly what addresses the antibody dependent enhancement. Sometimes the thing they give you to defend against will actually defend it. But a slight mutation on the surface antigens of that virus will be the thing that exploits, gets right into your system. These people know how to create these exploits. The backdoor and the exploit will be the mutation. They're getting us conditioned for the mutation. We may see tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people dying next year, year after, the year after. We don't know how long these backdoor lasts. It may last forever because they've done a lot of work on this one. And the question, and this is why they want everybody vaccinated, because they don't want a control group of people who didn't get the vaccine, who are all not dying, who can all say, dude, I didn't get your fucking poison. I didn't get your fucking poison. And we're all alive. And all these people that got the poison are dead. And that's why they want 100%.
Wow, man. And that reminds me of that Deagle article that came out showing 2015, showing populations in 2025, talking about how the United States was going to go from 330 million down to 99 million by 2025. And then when asked, you know, to elaborate on what their reasonings were, they said a viral pandemic and a collapse of the monetary system would be responsible for it. Boy, it's almost like they, you know, were halfway there, and it's almost like they kind of knew what was coming. This has been really helpful, I think, for people to understand it this way. When you talk about a virus, when you talk about a vaccine being a backdoor, I mean, just look who's pushing this. The tech industry is involved. The military is involved. What do they specialize in? Backdoors. They specialize in things that aren't. Why is I don't know if it's BlackRock or Blackstone. I can never remember. Why did they buy Ancestry.com for $2 billion to get access to all this genetic material? Is this a bioweapon? Is this the early stages of them using this to target people? It's amazing. You've done outstanding work. Tell these fine listeners where they can keep up with you and where they can find your work.
It's becoming more and more difficult to find my work because it's just getting banned. I just lost my Twitter account. I'm constantly banned on YouTube. So I have a BitChute channel, which maybe I could send you the stuff. You could put it in the description, but it's www.bitchute.com/HarryVox, one word, or Harry_Vox. I can't be sure. And they have a terrible search function. So unfortunately, a lot of people go, I tried to find you. I couldn't find you.
I'll put it in the description.
But I have a website that that I've had for 25 years now. One of the first websites, VOXNEWS, one word, voxnews.com. I haven't been updating that because that needs to get completely redone, that site. It's too old. But there's a sign up there for the mailing list, and I don't ask any information. I think you just put your email and you get it, because I'm not one of these people that ask you any questions. All right. That's the easiest way. You sign up for the mailing list there. Then I send out notifications on where my show is going to be, because, again, it bounces around. I'll be on DLive or on BitChute. I hear BitChute's going to have a streaming thing soon. I'm eventually working on getting my own streaming platform, so I don't have to deal with any of this, like Parler or any of these new platforms, which are all Zionist. Even if they say, oh, no. We're free speech. Don Bongino is committed to Zionists. All these people are frauds. Okay, so I think the only way to do it is just figure out a way to get money up and get my own streaming platform, and that's it. And invite people that, you know, and have a litmus test. If you're a piece of shit, you're not on it. But, you know, it's not open for every. It won't be open for everybody. It'll be open for people who've demonstrated that they're committed to truth wherever it takes them, even if it takes them down a road that is difficult. But you know, we need a litmus test, and the litmus test is clear our media and our political class from these people who are sabotaging our economy. So voxnews.com. That's a good starting point to get on that mailing list. And then we have I do broadcasts, webcasts that are really fun, and people love them. So once you've seen one broadcast, they're always really funny. I try to make sure that there's enough comedy in there, and people they come back for more. So yeah, it's a growing.
I've watched several of your live streams. They're funny. They're informative. They're everything that you would want if you were going online to try and find out information. You want to be entertained, but you want real information from a real guy that's not afraid to give you his opinion. That's Harry Vox, everybody. Go check out his work and support him. Thanks, Harry, for coming on the show. We really do appreciate it.
Good meeting you. Thanks for having me.